Could land me in some very hot water if anyone knew that I said anything.
He'd never seen Patty so distracted, so unsettled before. It was unnerving. What is it, Patty? Her eyes shimmered slightly, and when she spoke, it was in worried whispers.
I haven't just been sent here to help you communicate with the society. I've been sent here to watch your every move. So don't make any stupid ones, okay?
His grip on the doorknob tightened.
Could the society be listening now? Would they bug Patty's house? Was that something the society did? Were they,
he swallowed hard,
something to fear?
What happens if I do? She shook her head.
I don't know. I just know that I'd be lying if I said I wasn't at least a little bit scared for both of us.
As he opened the door and stepped outside, he cast her what he hoped was a comforting smile.
Don't worry, Patty. Everything will be okay, I'm sure of it.
When he stepped into the sun, he didn't feel its warmth. Only the prickle of worry and doubt that Patty's warnings had filled him with. And there was something else. Something gnawing at the center of his being with every step that he took. Every inch of him knew that what he just said to Patty was a lie. 4. Superman. Joss sat at the small desk in his bedroom, hunched over the glowing screen of his laptop. Every light was off in his room, and he was doing his best to click as quietly as he could with the trackpad and type as silently as he was able on his keyboard, for fear that his dad would hear. He was as surprised as anyone when his parents bought him a laptop for his last birthday, but not surprised at all that his dad had put so many restrictions on his use of it. Joss couldn't use it when they had company, or chores, or after lights out, so pretty much never, unless, of course, he snuck some time in without his parents finding out, which was exactly what he was doing. Plus, the internet was a great substitute for sleep, which was something that he wouldn't want to avoid at all if Cecile wasn't waiting for him inside his dreams with filthy claws for fingers and a hungry mouth. So his stolen time online served two purposes, really. He didn't enjoy breaking the rules, but at times he was forced to, whether by his parents or by the Slayer Society. Sometimes it felt like someone besides Joss was always running his life, always telling him what to do, always dictating what direction he should move in or what he should be doing. It made his chest feel tight, so tight that it was difficult to breathe, if he really thought about how little control he actually had over his own life. And that asthmatic feeling turned to a crushing sensation whenever he pondered that it would never end. Not when he graduated from high school, not when he graduated from college. His life would always be controlled by someone other than himself. The society would make certain of that. Joss squeezed his eyes closed and sat back in his chair, pinching the bridge of his nose for a moment. Just long enough to willingly forget about how his life was not his own. Just long enough to squash that driving need to be in control of his own destiny. With a stretch and a deep sigh, he returned his attention to the screen, hoping that his rule-breaking would at least prove fruitful. On the screen was a photograph of a man in his mid-40s, with black curly hair that stopped just short of his shirt's collar and bright blue eyes. Above the photograph was the article's title, "Local Man Killed by Pack of Coyotes." Above that was the newspaper's title, "The Santa Carla Sunset Times." The article was short and fairly straightforward, and one of only a few mentions that Joss could find of the man's passing available online. It stated that Hayworth Driscoll, age 47, had simply wandered out of his family-owned ice cream shop one day, presumably to go for a stroll, and had been attacked by a small pack of coyotes on the edge of the woods nearby. Nothing at all about the article struck Joss as unusual. People went for walks all the time. Coyotes were dangerous creatures, so he still wasn't certain why the society had marked this man's death as something to investigate further, with an eye toward vampire involvement. Apart from the fact that the man had apparently been deemed almost unrecognizable by the family members who came to identify the body. But wild animals did that too. Joss glanced up at his window, which now framed the rising sun. He'd been so immersed in the work he was doing that he hadn't even noticed the sun was on the verge of coming up. And now the sky was bright orange and yellow. A new day had begun. It disturbed him that his mind had been so deep into his task that he hadn't noticed the sun creeping up on him. What if a vampire had chosen that moment to attack him? It might have succeeded in killing him, all because Joss's head was stuck in the World Wide Web. Dragging his finger across the trackpad, Joss shut his computer down. He really needed to spend less time online. Besides, according to his research, the ice cream shop was about a 20-minute walk from his house and would be open in about 2 hours. It was crazy that it opened so early, but this was a tourist town, and such things just were. He closed his laptop and grabbed some clean clothes on his way out of his bedroom door. After a quick hot shower to help him wake up, Joss spent a long time brushing his teeth and trying not to fall asleep while standing up. The lack of rest was catching up to him. Catnaps were about all that he could manage without being tormented by Cecile and the nightmarish images that appeared inside his sleeping mind, but they weren't enough to make him feel truly rested. After he slipped into clean boxers, jeans, and a t-shirt, he rinsed his mouth, dropped his dirty clothes in the hamper, and hung the wet towel on the towel bar. Then, as quietly as he could, Joss descended the stairs and readied the coffee pot. Mornings like this called for caffeine. A lot of it. There were many stark differences between Henry's house and his own, but a big one was morning. In Henry's house, Joss would stumble down the stairs to a cozy kitchen in the morning, where he was greeted by Aunt Matilda's cheery smile. The smell of bacon and eggs would tantalize his senses as he grabbed a seat at the table. Over a cup of steaming coffee and the morning paper, Big Mike would ask if he had any plans for the day. Then, as Joss shoveled food into his mouth, Aunt Matilda would insist that all plans waited until the boys had washed and dried the breakfast dishes and put them all away. And Joss was happy to do it. He was happy to have that familial obligation, the way he didn't really have it at home. Since Cecile's passing, the kitchen at Joss's house was cool and lonely in the morning. If Joss wanted breakfast, he had better cook it himself, and it had better be Pop-Tarts. On occasion, his mom would already be sipping hot coffee when he made his way down the stairs, but she rarely greeted him, lost in her own world. His dad was never in the kitchen. There was no morning paper to read. Morning was a lonely time. His parents didn't like him drinking coffee, but Joss was sly. He grabbed the red mug from the corner cabinet that read "Keep Calm and Carry On," and turned it over in his hands. It was chipped slightly, evidence that this mug was his mom's favorite. He wondered how she was doing at that whole "carry on" thing, or if she could see the irony of a woman who was so frazzled, so broken, using a mug instructing her to do the very opposite. After pouring it full of hot coffee, he moved into the living room, where his mom was just sitting, and handed it to her. "Morning, Mom. Here's your coffee. Black, right?" She nodded a thank you and blew the steam from her mug's contents. No smile, no cheery banter, just a nod. But Joss would take it. Even though he was tempted to ask her if she was carrying on okay, he didn't ask because he already knew the answer. No, she wasn't okay. She wasn't carrying on very well at all. He moved back into the kitchen and grabbed a second mug from the cupboard. This one read, "Not all superheroes wear capes." Never a truer statement ever printed on a mug, he thought. He was like that. All the Slayers were. Superheroes with stakes instead of capes. He held it in his hand for a good long time before setting it on the counter and pouring himself half a mug of wake-up juice. After adding more cream and sugar than he'd ever seen either of his parents use, he gulped the sweet concoction down, rinsed out his mug, and glanced at the clock. According to their website, it was only about an hour until the ice cream parlor opened, though Joss had no idea what kind of person would want ice cream that early in the day. And Joss was feeling jumpy. Maybe that was due to the coffee, or maybe it was because he hadn't seen his dad yet and wanted to get out of firing range before he did something to upset the man. Either way, he thought it was probably a good idea that he get out the door and get moving. As he approached the back door, a familiar voice stopped him in his tracks. "Where you going?" Henry was standing in the kitchen, hair still damp from a shower, looking bored but curious. Joss was surprised to see him. Maybe he hadn't slept well in a strange bed, or maybe he had hoped that no one else would be up, and he could enjoy a moment of quiet before being subjected to his cousin's presence. Joss wondered if Henry had also reflected on the differences in mornings at their houses, and if he was feeling homesick at all because of it. But he wouldn't ask, mostly because he was feeling homesick enough for Henry's house. Joss shrugged casually, as if it were the most normal thing in the world. "I'm going to go to Driscoll's ice cream parlor down the road a bit and get some ice cream." Henry raised a sharp eyebrow at him then. "For breakfast?" "Yeah." Joss bit the inside of his cheek. Henry was going to see through his casual trip to the ice cream parlor for what it really was, reconnaissance for the Slayer Society, and then he was going to get all defensive in the name of Vlad and vampires everywhere. It wasn't a conversation that Joss wanted to have at all, but especially not one he wanted to have on no sleep and hardly any caffeine. Henry nodded. "I'm in." But. Joss needed a but, because Henry couldn't go with him. How was he supposed to investigate a potential crime by vampire with his girl-crazy cousin hanging around? He scrambled for something, anything, to keep Henry from tagging along. "You haven't had breakfast." Henry slipped his Converse on and tied the laces before meeting Joss's eyes. "Dude, ice cream is breakfast. How you figure?" Desperation gave way to panic. He wasn't certain how Henry would react if they got attacked by a vampire. He only knew that it wouldn't be good for either of them. "Two words, bacon sundae. Let's go." Henry opened the back door and gestured for Joss to go first. As Joss did, still trying to think of some way to get Henry to remain behind, Henry lowered his voice so that neither of Joss's parents would hear. "Besides, there's no way I'm letting you out of my sight after what you did to my best friend." An image crept into Joss's mind without his permission. That of blood pouring out onto Joss's palms. Vlad's blood. He blinked it away and met his cousin's gaze with a stern jaw. "What you don't know about that is that I saved him. I saved Vlad's life." Henry grabbed Joss's shirt collar and yanked him closer. His face was flushing red, and Joss could tell by the way his chest was rising and falling that it was taking every ounce of his cousin's self-control not to strangle him right then and there. Not that Joss blamed him. Not really. Henry's grip tightened on Joss's shirt until his knuckles turned white. His words were more than a whisper, but just less than a growl. "You stabbed him through the heart with a hunk of wood!" If it had been anyone besides Henry, Joss would have removed their grip and taught them a good lesson on why they shouldn't invade someone's personal space like that. But this was Henry. They were more like brothers than cousins. And even though it had torn them apart for Henry to learn Joss's darkest secret, he was relieved that Henry had found out. At least that lie wasn't standing between them anymore. At least, in that sense anyway, Joss was free. Before he could summon an excuse in his mind, the truth came pouring out of him in whispers, like the rambling of a madman. "I moved it. The stake. I moved it. At the last minute, to the side, so he'd survive. I had to stake him. The society would have... they would have done horrible things if I didn't. But I was willing to make it look like I missed by accident, Henry, because it's Vlad. He was my friend, too." Henry winced at the word friend. His eyes looked furious, but his grip released slightly. And in that moment, Joss saw hope. Hope that maybe someday, somehow, he could make his cousin understand. Maybe they could be friends again. If Henry didn't kill him first, of course. Henry released him, shoving him back a little with a grunt. You tried to kill him, Joss. Nothing can change that. I had to try. It's my job to try. It's my duty to try. Joss made certain that Henry met his eyes then. He waited for his cousin to look at him, so that Henry could see the absolute sincerity in his gaze. When that moment came, he said, But I didn't succeed. And I didn't succeed on purpose. He lived, Henry. Vlad lived because of me. The corner of Henry's mouth twitched. It was the only response he gave. Joss stepped forward, brushing by Henry on his way out the door. Just as he'd stepped outside, Henry stepped out after him. I'm going with you, Joss, and I'm staying on your every move for the next month, like your new shadow, because who knows who you might attack if someone's not there to stop you. I'm not going to attack any... Joss stopped himself before he lied. It was true that he didn't plan on attacking anyone, but what if a vampire attacked him? Then it was all bets off. He didn't want any more lies between his cousin and himself. Shaking his head, he said, You don't have to follow me, really. Don't have to, but going to. Where's this ice cream parlor anyway? Henry stepped outside completely, letting the screen door slap shut behind him. Joss wasn't exactly sure what to say, or what, if anything, he could possibly do to convince Henry that it wasn't the best idea on the planet that he follow Joss around. So rather, he sighed his frustration and shook his head, pointing up the road. Just up the road a bit. Henry moved in the direction that Joss had pointed, as if he were leading the way rather than shadowing Joss's every move. Joss had to jog a little at first in order to catch up with him. When he did, he slowed his pace to match Henry's stride. The two walked in silence for several minutes until two young boys crossed the road in front of them, carrying Nerf guns and sprinting as fast as their small feet would carry them. The sight of it brought a small smile to Joss's face. He dared a glance at Henry, who still wasn't smiling, and bet that Henry might not allow himself even a moment's happiness while he was in the company of Joss McMillan, Vampire Slayer. That reminds me of the time we snuck up on Greg with Super Soakers. No response from Henry. Not even a small twitch. Do you remember? We filled our squirt guns with cranberry juice and climbed that tree in your backyard. We were going to get him through the open window. Joss chuckled at the memory. Only it turned out he was supposed to get his pictures taken that day and we had no idea. My mom was so mad at us. The corner of Henry's mouth lifted in a smirk, one that Joss was enormously relieved to see. Joss laughed openly, shaking his head. How were we supposed to know he'd be wearing white? We both got grounded for a week. Yeah. The two cousins exchanged looks then, and Joss wasn't sure what it meant. He only knew that he missed their closeness, their connection. He missed the way that things had been before he'd lost Cecile, before he'd trained to become a slayer, before he'd staked Vlad. He missed Henry. Henry blinked, as if bringing himself back to the present. The smile washed from his face, and he turned his attention back to the road. But that's the past. If I'd known then what you'd turn into later, I... You'd what? There was no stopping this, Henry. I'm a slayer. It's just a part of me, like having blonde hair is a part of you. Like being a vampire is a part of Vlad? Henry stopped in his tracks then and met Joss's eyes. His words weren't bitter, just matter of fact, which in some ways made them much harder for Joss to hear. Don't try to make me understand it, Joss, because I won't ever understand how you think that killing people is like having blonde hair. You make choices in life, and you're making the wrong ones. Joss wanted to blurt out that vampires kill people all the time, much more than slayers ever do, but instead he fought to keep his mouth shut. An argument at this point in time would get him nowhere. He'd seen the light in Henry's eyes when he spoke of their shared childhood. There was hope there, hope that their friendship could be saved. But he could only save it with patience and time, not with arguments about who had a bigger body count. Like a beacon, the ice cream parlor came into view. It was a small building painted a pale pink color with crude, childlike drawings of children skipping rope painted on its outer walls. As Joss pushed the door open, a bell jingled, announcing their arrival. No sooner had they approached the young man behind the counter than Henry blurted out, "Superman!" At first, Joss blinked. Did Henry know this guy or something? Had he seen him out and about in blue tights and red underwear donning a cape? Or was Henry losing his mind completely? Henry jabbed a finger at the glass case that covered the enormous cardboard tubs of ice cream. He was pointing at one flavor that looked like the brightest rainbow that Joss had ever seen and grinning at the boy behind the counter. "Superman ice cream. 3 scoops. Waffle cone. Make it happen, dude." A small voice spoke in the back of Joss's mind. Not all superheroes wear capes. The boy piled 3 heaping scoops into a waffle cone and handed it to Henry before looking at Joss. He was maybe 18, and his eyes looked suspiciously similar to those of the dead owners. Joss guessed that this was the man's son. He said, "And what can I get you?" Joss mulled over the ice cream for a bit, trying to think of a casual way to work in questions about the boy's dead father. It all looks good. Which is your favorite?
Moose Tracks. But we're having a sale on Raspberry Bliss.
Joss shrugged and pulled his wallet from his back pocket.
I'll try the raspberry, I guess.
Can I ask why it's on sale? It's not like bad or anything, is it?
Nope. Just doing a little tribute to my dad. It was his favorite flavor.
As he spoke, his eyes shimmered. The pain was still fresh, the hurt still new. This was what Henry was missing about Joss's job. Joss was helping people. As he handed over a 10, Joss frowned.
I'm so sorry.
If you don't mind my asking, how did he die?
Coyotes, if you can believe it.
The boy handed him back his change and sighed, his shoulders slumped in sorrow. He pointed out the window behind him to a spot just across the road.
He was attacked by a small pack of them over there, just a few yards into the woods. It was strange, too. My dad never went for walks in the woods.
That last sentence sent a curious bolt through Joss. If it was a vampire, it was messy work. After slipping his change inside, Joss returned his wallet to his pocket, shaking his head the entire time. He might not know what it was like to lose a parent to death, but he could empathize on what it was like to not have your father there for you anymore, and what it was like to lose a close family member. I'm sorry.
Me too.
The circles under his eyes suggested that Joss and this boy had more in common than he probably would ever realize. Shutting the cash register drawer, the boy sighed.
Anyway, if you want anything else, just shout. I'll be in the back, doing inventory.
By the time Joss turned his head to look at his cousin, Henry had already devoured half of his ice cream cone. Joss took 2 licks of his, just as a measure of politeness, before dropping it in the trash. When Henry cast him a questioning glance, Joss merely shrugged. Raspberry. Henry looked at the trash can with an air of disgust.
Gross.
Joss pushed the door open, inciting that jingle once again, and held it for his cousin. Once they were outside, Joss eyed the edge of the tree line, hoping to find something that would definitively tell him whether this was a vampire killing or really just wild animals. He hoped for the latter.
Hey, Henry, I've got to check out the woods for a second, if you don't mind, I mean.
Henry shoved the last of his ice cream cone into his mouth. Between chews, he said,
"Whatever you say, killer."
The tiny hairs on the back of Joss's neck bristled, but he said nothing in reply. 5. A blast from the past. After waiting for Henry to wipe his face clean with a too thin napkin and then locate a trash can in which to throw it away, Joss crossed the road and entered the woods, hoping he'd be able to determine where the man who owned the ice cream parlor, Mr. Driscoll, had died. He was very aware of Henry behind him, his feet tromping over fallen twigs and dead leaves, alerting any vampire within a 20-mile radius of their presence. Joss understood that Henry hadn't had the benefit of stealth training that the society had provided him, but he also knew that if a vampire attacked them, he was going to have to save his cousin. After all, Henry was under the mistaken impression that vampires were kind, friendly people who just happened to have fangs and a thirst for blood, but really longed for peace between the species. It likely wouldn't even occur to Henry that vampires were cruel, vicious monsters with an agenda all their own, fighting to drain every human vein they found dry of blood. Henry's brain wasn't wired that way. He'd grown up in a warm, loving household where people were truly good and life would have a happy ending. Henry grew up not understanding the truth of the world, that it's not always grandma under the sheet, that the woodsmen won't come to save you, and that believing in happy endings will only get you eaten by wolves. At least that's how Joss had come to see the world. He knew the truth of things. He understood that sometimes horrible things happen to wonderful families, things that shatter those families into a thousand pieces forever, and that nothing and no one can ever bring those pieces back together ever again. He knew that there really were monsters that lurked in dark places, monsters with friendly faces. He knew pain and loss and absolute fury. All Henry knew was joy. Joss hated him for that, and he hated himself for doing so, just a little bit. "What are we doing out here?" Henry sighed impatiently behind him. Joss scanned the area with his keen eyes but saw nothing out of place. It was as if no attack had happened in this location, and he was beginning to wonder if maybe the report of the attack had been a cover-up. "What's the matter, Henry? You don't like hiking?" Henry stepped up beside him, shrugging. "I'm more of an indoor person most of the time." Joss glanced at him with a furrowed brow. "What about sports? You and Greg play sports all the time. Aren't those outdoors?" "Yeah, but we don't run around in the woods for no purpose." Joss was just about to tell Henry that he could see more purpose in hiking through nature than he could in chasing a ball around some field, when Henry asked, "Are you looking for something?" The woods all around them were quiet and serene. Every once in a while, a critter would dash from one bit of underbrush to the next. But other than that, and a few chirpings from the birds in the branches above, the forest was silent. There was no sign of a struggle, or footprints, or anything that suggested a coyote attack. Joss shrugged. "Kinda. The man who owned the ice cream shop died out here." "And you're looking for his body? Gross." Henry's face turned a bit green, but it didn't last. Joss moved forward, and his cousin came with him. As they crested a small hill, Joss said, "No, this guy died a few weeks ago. I'm just curious if it's true what they say about him having been killed by coyotes." Henry stopped Joss in his tracks with a hand to the chest. "Wait, so you found out that some old dude was ripped to shreds by some coyotes right here and you came out here willingly?" "Yeah, basically." Henry's eyes bugged out of his head. "What if there are still coyotes out here? And what if they're still hungry?" All Joss could do was shrug, pretty much because he hadn't really thought that there might still be coyotes out here to deal with. He didn't believe that coyotes had killed the man in the first place. Slayers weren't sent to deal with wild animals. Slayers were sent to eradicate vampires. "You're either incredibly stupid or incredibly cool." Henry stepped back, shaking his head. The corner of Joss's mouth lifted in a small smile, one that didn't last. Henry put an end to it as quickly as he was able to. "I'm leaning toward option number one." It bugged Joss that Henry couldn't just enjoy a moment with him, that he had to keep Joss at bay, all because of an incident that had very little to do with him. What had happened between Joss and Vlad was between them, not Joss's cousin, not Vlad's drudge. Was it so wrong that he wanted to experience just one moment where they were simply cousins and not two people on divided sides of an argument? Joss shook his head,
and went back to surveying the area around them. Just let me know if you see anything.
Like blood and guts? Or like vicious wild animals running at me? Because either way, I'm letting you know. Probably with a girlish squeal.
Henry looked around at the woods, but Joss didn't see much real worry in his eyes. It was mostly boredom and irritation at having been dragged into nature unexpectedly.
I'll have you know that there are some pretty interesting species of insects that feed on corpses.
You and bugs, man. It's weird.
Henry shook his head.
Obviously, Joss's love of entomology completely escaped him.
Joss would never understand it. Insects made the world go round. They were the planet. They were life. Without them, humans would be nowhere.
Something bold and bright and not at all natural to the forest setting caught Joss's attention. It looked like a bit of cloth or a flag or something. Whatever it was bright yellow and flapping around in the breeze. It looked, from this distance, as if it had caught on some weeds or a branch.
Joss moved toward it, happy to have something other than tree trunks and dead leaves to look at.
You see anything out of the ordinary, just let me know.
So what horrible slayer task are we here to accomplish anyway?
Henry's words stopped Joss dead in his tracks. He turned back to face his cousin. All playfulness was gone from each of their expressions now. Now they were all business. Joss frowned, ready to defend his duty.
I never said we were here on any slayer business. And if I said that I was?
Henry set his jaw, the anger and defensiveness already rising up inside of him in an acutely visible way.
I'd kick your...
Henry. Joss held up a hand, softening his tone. I'm just trying to help the kid in that shop by tracking down who or whatever killed his dad, okay?
Yeah, right. I'm not killing anyone, and just so we're clear, when I go back home, I don't plan on speaking to you ever again.
Henry walked past him then, even though he hadn't seen the yellow thing and had no real direction to go in. As he passed Joss, their shoulders hit. He glared at Joss, as if Joss had done it on purpose. In response, Joss simply held up his hands in mock surrender. Henry kept walking. As Joss approached the bright piece of yellow, he recognized it as a piece of police tape. Crouching, he saw that it hadn't just blown here freely. It was actually tied to a small shrub. The rest of the tape had been ripped away, but Joss was certain that he and his cousin were now standing at the crime scene. Signs of that were all around him. Leaves had been moved away, revealing the forest floor. Small, low-hanging branches had been broken free from the surrounding trees. The footsteps of the investigators and perhaps the victim himself littered the ground. But the curious thing was that there were no paw prints in the dirt. Nothing at all to suggest that a coyote or a group of coyotes had attacked the man at all. If rain had washed away the coyote's prints, it would have washed away that of the people, too, and it hadn't. So Joss's curiosity level ticked up a notch. Maybe the society's instincts were right. Maybe a vampire had killed the owner of the ice cream parlor.
Why didn't you apologize?
When Joss looked over at his cousin, Henry was standing just a few feet from him, eyes locked on Joss in a way that suggested he wasn't going anywhere until he had the answers he sought.
You could have at least apologized to Vlad after stabbing him with that thing. But he said that even when you came to see him at the hospital, you didn't apologize to him.
Why? Joss stood his ground, calmly but firmly.
Because I did nothing wrong.
Disgust visibly washed over Henry.
You put a stake through his internal organs, Joss. You nearly killed him. That at least deserves an apology.
Do soldiers apologize when they take down a terrorist?
No,
because they did nothing wrong. They're just following orders by taking out a threat to innocent people, which is what I was doing.
Joss was trying everything that he could to keep his voice calm and even, but it was a challenge.
Henry was acting like he was some terrible villain, like he was the Joker when, clearly, he was Batman.
Henry stepped closer and dropped his voice to a near whisper, holding Joss's gaze as he spoke.
Have you ever stopped to think about who's giving you those orders?
What if you're mindlessly obeying the instructions of the bad guys? Joss shook his head, clenching his jaw. The Slayer Society is noble and right and good, Henry. You have no idea what you're talking about. They're good people. Vlad's a good person. Henry tilted his head. He'd never listen to Joss. He'd never listen to reason. And it was seriously ticking Joss off. Without thinking, Joss gave Henry a light shove and then pointed a finger at him angrily. You only think that because he's got you under his spell. Your mind is lost in a vampire-induced haze. You're his human slave, Henry. At that, Henry balled his fist, and as he brought it up, Joss dodged out of the way. But it wouldn't have mattered if Joss had stayed right where he was, because something moved out of the surrounding forest and whipped past Joss's face, carrying Henry with it. In a blink, Joss saw his cousin slam against the trunk of a white birch tree. His eyes rolled over white, and Henry slid down the trunk of the tree in an unconscious heap. Joss immediately reached for the leather holster that was hidden on his hip, beneath his shirt. But before he could grip his stake, the creature rushed by again, knocking the wooden weapon away before he could grab it. Joss scrambled, spinning around, trying to locate his missing stake and get a look at whatever it was that had attacked his cousin and then disarmed him. But he couldn't see the creature anywhere, which told him that this wasn't just some lightning-quick animal. This was a vampire. Joss braced himself for anything and reached up, snapping loose a section of low-hanging branch. The wood was dead, but solid enough to work. He listened to the sounds of the forest for anything that stood out as unusual. Breathing, footsteps, anything, but there was nothing. From nowhere, Joss was slammed against the tree, his head bouncing off its trunk. The sharp section of branch was ripped from his hand, and when he looked at what it was that had pinned him, his heart sank. His throat closed with heartbreak and sorrow. His entire being filled with confusion. The fight had left him, something that filled him with shame as well. Because a slayer should fight. A slayer would fight, especially in this situation. The eyes were just as kind, just as sympathetic as Joss could remember. The mouth, Joss couldn't look at it for long due to the horrible fangs inside, was the same. Everything about him was the same as the last time they had spoken. The lines in the face no worse, as the man was now frozen in time. A vampire. Forever. And there was nothing that Joss could do to reverse his condition. When Joss spoke at last, his voice came out shaking from utter shock. Cyrus? Cyrus nodded slowly. He looked to be sizing up how much danger he was in. Joss shook his head, not knowing if what he was seeing was real or some twisted image his sleep-starved brain had conjured. Cyrus, I thought you died. That explosion, I thought I...
You didn't kill me, Joss, but you did do a lot of damage.
Cyrus relaxed his grip on Joss and gave a small, grateful smile. Joss could only assume that Cyrus was grateful that Joss had engaged him with words rather than combat. When Cyrus smiled, it broke Joss's heart a little bit more. Cyrus said,
It's good to see you, too.
Joss had so many questions, he didn't know where to begin. Cyrus had survived the explosion in the cabin? How? And what was he doing here now? Where was Kat? Did she know her father was still alive? What was he here to do exactly? The questions jumbled around in his mind until they were all just a big blur. He stammered, How?
Joss, I'm sorry about your cousin and about your head, but I don't have much time and I had to get him out of the way and you unarmed. I'm here to warn you. There's something in the woods. It's coming for you. And it's far worse than him.
Cyrus looked sharply to his left then, deeper into the woods. The look in his eyes was one of sheer panic. Joss glanced around, but saw nothing.
How do you know that? And how do you know that M's after me?
Henry moaned softly from where he lay at the base of the tree. Slowly, he was stirring into wakefulness, but he wasn't quite there yet.
Listen to me.
Cyrus pressed him against the tree again, with more force than Joss wagered he'd intended. It was his vampire strength, probably difficult to control. Cyrus moved so close that Joss had a brief worry that he might bite. Instead, Cyrus gripped Joss's collar with one hand and pressed his stake into his palm with the other. His words were those of absolute sincerity.
Trust your dreams. They're more real than you realize.
How did you know where to find me? Silently, Joss swore not to report this part to the society. Not yet. He needed some time to wrap his head around the strangeness of it all, and to make certain that he hadn't lost his mind entirely. Cyrus smiled again, and oh, how Joss hated that his heart lit up to see it. Cyrus, still alive. It was a miracle.
We share a friend who told me where to find you. And by the way, Dorian sends his greetings. He says he looks forward to seeing you again.
Then, in a light breeze, Cyrus was gone. The stake felt heavy in Joss's hand. He spun around, searching the trees for any sign of his long-lost friend.
When will I see you again? I have things to ask you. Cyrus? Cyrus? Cyrus!
But Cyrus was gone. 6. The Fragile Lyre. Joss brought the axe down hard, splitting another log, this time with ease. As he did so, he was reminded of his initial slayer training, and how horrible that summer in the Catskills had been for him. It was for the good of the cause, he supposed, but it was difficult to see while he was in the moment. And if he was honest, even more difficult to see as time passed by. But he wasn't really thinking about the Slayer Society at all as he chopped firewood for his dad, who thought that they should probably get things ready for the coming fall and winter, even though summer had only just barely started. Instead, he was thinking about Cyrus, and about what he probably should have done when he saw Cyrus, but didn't, and why he didn't. He should have killed Cyrus, he knew that. But he hadn't acted on it. The truth was, when he saw Cyrus's face and had realized that his mentor, his friend, his father figure was still alive, he was relieved. More relieved, maybe, than when he'd seen Vlad lying in the hospital and had learned that he'd survived as well. Because Vlad had been his friend, but Cyrus had been his, well, like a dad to him. Guiltily, he glanced at the house in the growing darkness. He probably shouldn't think that way, or feel that way, or be that way, but there it was. Cyrus had been a kinder, more attentive father than his own dad had been capable of in recent years. And despite those damn fangs in his mouth, Joss had been utterly overjoyed at seeing him once again. Joss stuck the blade into a nearby log and stood back, wiping his neck with a handkerchief and feeling like the worst son in existence. He hated that he liked Cyrus better than his own dad, but how do you change the way you feel? Isn't something like that ingrained on your heart, if not your DNA? After shoving the handkerchief half into his back jeans pocket once again, Joss retrieved the axe and set up another log. As he lifted the tool, his thoughts drifted to Henry. Once Cyrus had disappeared into the woods, Joss shook Henry into consciousness and helped him to stand. The entire walk home, Henry was in a daze and holding his head. Joss wasn't sure what to say to his cousin about what exactly had slammed him against that tree, so he said nothing about it at all. Once they returned home, Henry went in the guest room and Joss was given chores all day. They hadn't spoken since. Joss was kind of relieved about that. After all, how do you explain to your vampire-adoring cousin that a vampire just knocked the snot out of him without provocation? You don't. You just chop some wood and hope the whole thing blows over in time for dinner. As if on cue, the side door opened and Henry stepped outside. Joss brought the axe down again before tossing the split log neatly into the pile to his left. He was hoping, praying, counting on Henry not approaching him, not saying a word, and if he had to speak, to not ask about what had knocked him out in the woods. Mostly because he already knew where that conversation would lead,
and he absolutely didn't want to go there with his cousin again. Why couldn't they stick to simple discussion topics, like the weather or which hot celebrity Henry unrealistically thought he had a chance at? Why did it always have to be about vampires? A small voice spoke up from the back of Joss's mind, one he wished that he couldn't hear. It said that Joss had it wrong. His way of thinking was askew. It wasn't about vampires at all, not for Henry. For Henry, it was about his best friend, plain and simple. Vampire or human, it didn't matter to Henry. Vlad was his friend, and Joss had almost killed him. Joss reminded the voice that he was a slayer, and that it was his job to kill vampires. Inside his imagination, the voice just gave him a knowing look, one that caused Joss to sigh deeply as he reached for the next log. Henry's shoulders were slightly slumped as he approached. "I'm supposed to help you with the wood." Clearly, the last thing that he wanted to be doing was hanging out in the growing darkness with his cousin chopping wood. Come to think of it, that was the last thing that Joss wanted, too. "Your dad said he wants it done by dinner." Dinner. The world rolled around uncomfortably inside Joss's mind, like a loose marble. He was so used to grabbing a sandwich by himself or popping a frozen meal into the microwave that he was pretty uncertain what Henry had meant by his dad mentioning the D word. Dinner was something that their family had had before they lost Cecile. Now they simply foraged in the kitchen for food while avoiding eye contact. "What's for dinner?" "Pizza." He and Henry locked eyes then. Joss hated what he saw in Henry's face, but it was undeniable. Pity. Henry couldn't deny what was lying all around him in shambles. Joss's family was falling apart, and now he knew that for sure. Joss stood there, the axe dangling in his right hand, shifting his feet uncomfortably in embarrassment. He could feel tears beginning to well in his eyes, but fought to keep them contained. "Remember how much my mom loved to cook? Before?" He hadn't been able to say before Cecile died, but he knew Henry would understand what he'd meant. It was too difficult to talk about his sister, especially when discussing the chaos and destruction that had been left in the wake of her demise. Henry forced a smile, his eyes shimmering. "Yeah, she and my mom could cook circles around each other. But things change, I guess." "I hope they don't." Henry tilted his head curiously at Joss's words, so Joss clarified. "I mean, I hope that my mom's love of cooking is still in there somewhere. I keep on hoping that I'll wake up to the smells of breakfast and happiness, you know?" Memories of his mom's creativity in the kitchen came flooding through Joss's mind. The table had always been perfectly set. The food was in abundance, and the recipes wonderfully complex. His mom had a passion for cooking then, and now she didn't have a passion for anything. She took her medication and sat quietly most of the time, the color drained from her days. Joss worried about her. He worried a lot, and with good reason. "Losing Cecile really changed things, didn't it? The extended family talks, of course, and I see it when you guys visit, but I really had no idea how bad it had gotten for your family, Joss. You all just seem so..." Henry swallowed hard, wiping his eyes with the back of his hand. His words were softly spoken and carefully chosen. "Fragile." Fragile, meaning they could be broken. Joss refused to believe that, refused to believe that his family could crumble and blow away with the wind. He tightened his grip on the axe and readied another log, his jaw tight, his shoulders newly tense. He never should have talked to Henry about this, never should have opened himself up in this way. What good could possibly come of it? Nothing. "We're fine." "You don't have to. I said we're fine." Joss brought the axe down hard, cutting both the wood and Henry's words. Clearly, Henry had hit a nerve. Henry watched him quietly for several minutes as Joss moved through several logs. Just as the sun had finally dipped behind the trees, casting a nighttime feel, Henry spoke. His tone was even, as if he were worried that any misspeak might damage the already frazzled Joss. Joss would never admit it if asked, but he was right. What can I do to help? Joss lowered the axe momentarily and looked around before pointing to the house. Carry the wood I've already cut over to the rack by the garage and stack it. Without complaint, Henry moved from the cut pile to the stack by the garage and back again. Joss continued to cut wood, all the while amazed at how cooperative his normally hot-headed cousin was being. My head's still killing me. Henry rubbed his temples as he approached the last few logs in the cut pile. Then, as if remembering something, he paused and looked at Joss. Hey, what happened out there today? Was it a coyote or something? What hit me? Joss furrowed his brow in contemplation. On one hand, it was actually kind of nice to have someone to talk to about the existence of vampires. On the other, he knew that admitting anything regarding a vampire attack would put Henry immediately on the defensive. Joss made an executive decision and looked at his cousin. It was a coyote. Big one, too. After it hit you, it ran off deeper into the woods. Apparently, it thought you were alone. When it saw there were two of us, it must have gotten spooked. We were lucky. Looks like that guy died by a coyote attack after all. Instantly, Joss could tell that Henry didn't believe a word that he was saying. And who could blame him? Joss's tone was so full of it, he might as well have had a sign on his forehead flashing, "I am such a liar," in bright neon red. But it wasn't Joss's fault. He was having a difficult time focusing on being smooth and believable on the heels of the discussion about his fragile family. In short, he wasn't trying hard enough, and they both knew it. Henry raised an eyebrow. Are you lying to me? No. Joss's heart beat hard inside his chest, as if tapping him in quiet disagreement. You're lying to me. It wasn't a question anymore. Not that it had been much of one in the first place, but Henry had been giving him a chance then. Now there was no turning back. No, I'm not, Joss set his jaws stubbornly. Joss? What? Henry groaned, running a haphazard hand through his hair. Astoundingly, his hair looked even better after. He met Joss's eyes and visibly fought to keep his